Welcome to Clover Club, a podcast about curious conversations and stories intended to make you laugh and learn. I'm your host, Erica, and let me tell you what, today's guest is a huge deal because this is the first time I've had to have compliance involved. So today I'm beyond excited to welcome my financial advisor, Lauren Iddens. Lauren, hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming on Clover Club.
So excited to be here. It is a huge honor because I am very passionate about the importance of saving and investing, but making it fun because I think there's a big perception that investing and money is scary and not anything that people want to spend their time on. And I really do try to make it fun and interesting.
Yes. I kind of want to start this whole conversation with how Lauren and I became acquainted. It's a cautionary tale, and unfortunately, it's my cautionary tale. So if you're listening, you know that I'm a hairdresser. And for the first portion of my career, I worked and received tips. And so I had stockpiled a lot of cash. I had a shoebox that I cut a hole in the top of and duct taped the lid to. And I would just squirrel away cash. Anytime I got an unexpectedly big tip or like a birthday something or whatever for years and years and years. And so I got to my mid-20s. I had just broken off an engagement with my shitty fiance. And I was like, okay, I gotta like start doing grown-up stuff. And so one of my friend's older brothers was a, air quotes, financial advisor. And I met with him to talk about how to invest my money. And he very confidently took me under his wing and had a plan. And so me and my little shoebox that had $10,000 in it went to Wells Fargo and I opened up this account with him. Over the course of several I don't know if you remember how many years, Lauren. Years and years and years. I was investing hundreds of dollars a month into this account. And I was like, in my mind, set it and forget it type of situation. And it was an auto draft. I didn't look into it. And so then one day I was like, I wonder how that account's doing. It was around COVID. That's what it was. Because I was like, I'm running through my savings. What's going on here? What's the penalty to access this? Da, 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 da. And so I find that the balance of the account is like fucking crickets. And I was like, something is wrong here. And that's when I started to find out that I had been the victim of quite the little scam, but technically a totally legal scam. I was preyed upon by this man who knew that I was just like, I'm just a girl. I don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, I know what to do with this money. And so from there, I was expressing to a client, like, I'm just devastated. This is like tens of thousands of dollars gone. What do I do? And she was like, oh, you've got to talk to my girl, Lauren. She will straighten all of this out. And that's when I got in touch with you, Lauren. And that's when we started to untangle this just, I don't even want to get into the details, but like just this very unfortunate situation. And so we did the best we could and transferred all of that under your tutelage and then started actual real financial planning together. And here we are.
Here we are. And you still have that old investment product and it will be with us for about another year and a half before we can do anything with it.
I think this happens all day, every day. And you probably see this a lot and have people come to you that are like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And if you're listening, you're probably thinking, surely it was in the paperwork you signed. Of course it was in the paperwork I signed. But I was 26 years old and this guy who's friends with my brother is like, meet me at Starbucks and we'll handle it. And I trusted him. And so I think kind of one of the underlying themes of today is why it's so important to have a financial advisor and to partner with somebody who you trust and somebody who looks at money and growing money the same way that you do. And Lauren, you like immediately after our first conversation, I was like, oh, she's like gonna enjoy unweaving this, or maybe enjoy is not the word, but I could just tell that you were like, oh, we're gonna get to the bottom of this. And we did, and I feel so much better, and I did lose tens of thousands of dollars, but it's better to do that in your 20s than in your 50s, so I feel like I learned a huge lesson, and on today's episode, I want to kind of share a lot of what I've learned and a lot of your expertise, Lauren, so that people don't end up either in a situation like I was in or in a situation where you're just not growing your money and you're leaving money on the table. So, yeah.
I think there's risk involved in absolutely everything. And people a lot of times are worried about investing their money and losing all of it. Mm-hmm. The stock market never goes to zero. Mm-hmm. I mean, can't guarantee that, but historically, it's never gone to zero. What has happened is people run out of their money because they haven't saved enough, or they spend too much for the amount that they have saved. And that is also a very real concern.
Yeah.
And your situation was one where you essentially were in something illiquid, something not accessible. Mm-hmm. You couldn't make changes. There were internal expenses that were
secret, huge.
And that essentially ate up all of the money that you were putting in. Mm-hmm. Probably the extent of what we can get into about that situation. Mm-hmm. So question for you. I know that it was a friend's brother. Mm-hmm. How many questions did you ask him going into it?
I would say I asked the questions that made sense for me to ask as a 26-year-old with no experience. And I also knew that I had other friends that were investing with him. Mm. And so there was just sort of I absolutely went in with blind trust. So it's not that I didn't ask questions, but I just believed everything. And I didn't ask, maybe, I didn't probe him. And I didn't know maybe the right questions to ask.
We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know what I didn't know. And in hindsight, all of the friends I knew that were also investing with him had similar experiences. Mm. So it wasn't just me. I mean, mm-hmm. this was a very well-organized thing. And I reported him to, what's the licensing committee? Or what's the...
Oh, we're governed by a whole lot of people, but there's the SEC, there's FINRA.
The SEC, I definitely sent a letter to. I sent a letter to compliance for... It's Wells Fargo. I'm not going to name him, but I'll definitely name that it's Wells Fargo. And nobody cared, because technically everything that he did was above board. It was just he dipped his feet real close to the line. So
trust is, I think, one of the most critical parts of this business, because every advisor is going to run their practice a bit differently. Mm-hmm. And they're allowed to, as long as they fall within what is legal and what their firm's compliance allows.
Yeah.
And that is one of the beauties of the business, but that's also something that you as the client have to be smart about when entering a relationship and really doing that due diligence and having sometimes multiple conversations with a potential new advisor to understand, well, how do they run their business? What do they like? What do they believe in? Are they a good fit for you? Do they have experience with people of your similar situation? You know, and that can be young professionals, that can be small business owners, that can be, you know, hey, I'm approaching maybe closer to middle age and I've got a spouse and a baby and I haven't done anything yet. What now?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's situation is different. And there's going to be an advisor for you, but not every advisor is going to be a good fit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think too, looking back, I would say I should have trusted my gut, because I do remember thinking, it's weird that we're meeting at a coffee shop and not your office.
I don't like coffee shops because the essence of what we do is tell me how much money you have or don't have, and tell me where it is, and tell me how you spend your money. These are very personal, intimate questions.
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel comfortable having that conversation in a coffee shop.
Yeah, I didn't. And I just, at the time, I was like, oh, I guess this is what you do, you know? But I do remember a little but I overrode it because of all of these other things. So I would say, even if you can't justify why something feels off, let yourself explore that.
One of the things that I would say is trust your gut instinct. And I don't know if that's a female thing, woman to woman. We kind of have a strong intuition there.
Yeah.
Or men, I hope you too check in with yourself and feel like you're making good decisions.
Yes.
But this is a person you are completely trusting with presumably most of your money.
Yeah.
Do you like this person?
Yeah.
What kind of feelings do they give you? Are they validating your questions and concerns, or are they telling you, don't worry, little lady, I've got this, you don't need to know the why?
Yes.
I personally feel strongly about educating my clients. It is okay if you come to me and say, I don't know what is up and what is down, and I have a lot of stupid questions, because no questions are stupid. And I love the education part of it.
Yeah.
Because if you understand what we're doing and why, that's going to empower you to make better decisions. And, you know, in my highly regulated industry, I do constant continuing education and things like that. And in some of the classes, they'll say, you know, have strong opinions, be a powerful leader. I don't necessarily agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think that with my personal business model, it is a collaborative relationship. Yeah. I'm going to present information to you and say, hey, I think we're facing some potential recession because of the Fed raising interest rates. These are two possible ways that that could go. How do you feel about that? I can't dictate that there's only one right decision for you because this is an art. We make educated guesstimates. And it's important to remember that. All investing is going to involve some risk.
Yeah.
And I want you to be comfortable with what risk we are taking and what we're giving up. And even on the side of if we do something that is more guaranteed, mm-hmm. you're going to give up return potential. And that might be just fine. And if that is what fits for you, perfect. But we always have to understand there is a trade-off to absolutely everything.
Yeah. You immediately, I felt comfortable with you because you are, and that's why I wanted you to be on this podcast, is that you obviously love this and you obviously think about this so much. And we've had earnings calls where you're going into so much detail and I'm like, Lauren, I don't know, but I feel like I trust. What I say to you so many times, I feel like it's like, what would you do if it was your money? And I'm like, I'll do that.
Yeah. And I do. I mean, I manage my own money. I invest in the majority of the investments that I recommend to clients. I'm pretty high growth. So that might be the only area where if someone's like, let's dial it back a little bit. Okay. Sure. Maybe I don't own that particular strategy, but yeah. you put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lauren, you started in this industry through birth. So your dad, does he do exactly what you do? Will you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to be here? Because I feel like that's got to have made an impact on your ideology.
Yeah. So I took a different path to become, I mean, so technically a financial advisor. I think that's a boring term. Mm-hmm. I prefer wealth strategist.
Ooh, I like that.
How do we strategize to either get you wealthy or keep you wealthy? Ooh. But coming out of high school, I went into college with a communications focus. Okay. And graduated with a degree in public relations and advertising.
Interesting.
More on the public relations side. And I did that for about 7 years.
Okay.
And enjoyed the relationship aspect of what I was doing, but I kind of topped out on my career path there.
Okay.
I was working for a law firm, and as a non-lawyer, you can't be a partner in a law firm.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, what next? I'm in my 20s. There has to be more. My dad has been an advisor with Raymond James since my mom was pregnant.
Whoa.
So literally, I grew up in this business, and my dad really enjoyed what he did. I was fortunate enough that he was home for family dinners almost every night, and he talked about work, cool. and he talked about it really positively. And he opened an investment account for me, and we would physically graph it and color in a bar chart with the monthly statements.
God, I and love this. I'm so you know, glad I asked you this.
Yeah, so most months the money would grow, and then there were months and there were years that the money didn't grow.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. And then as I got a lot older, that became a conversation around, you know, this money is a powerful gift. What are you going to do with it? You can use it for college. You can have a lengthy college stay and there's not going to be any money left. Mm-hmm. Or you can be focused and maybe there's something to help you buy a house.
Ooh.
And I think empowering others to make decisions through education, kind of going back to what I said about I really believe in the education around it,
yeah.
is important. And so I got my act together. I graduated college a little bit early.
Ooh.
And I was fortunate enough to use a little bit of leftover and I bought a condo for myself.
Oh, yes.
And it provided stability in my life when I really, really needed it, coming out of a pretty bad relationship. And also a job change. I had been laid off.
Okay.
And feeling like questioning myself, am I good enough? I went to college out of state. I had moved back to Atlanta.
Okay.
Didn't have a lot of friends. And it was a big, whoa, what now moment. And having...
What age did that happen around?
I think I was 25.
Okay, yep.
So out of college for just a couple years, doing all the right things, got laid off regardless because it was 2008.
There it is.
I mean, not a particularly unique story, but having that condo, gave me a sense of roof over my head, mm-hmm. and I can try to find myself. And I did not have furniture for the longest time. And my best friend, Mandy, finally looked at me and said, I'm tired of sitting on the floor watching TV.
Yeah.
We have to go get a couch. We have to.
Any couch will do.
Any couch will do. And I still have that couch. It actually has such strong emotional ties. And it is a beat up old couch. And I just can't get rid of it.
I love it. Is it your... like living room couch now, or is it like
in it the- is the prominent living room couch.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that story.
So long story short on, well, how did I arrive at becoming a wealth strategist is I had been through a couple of job changes, but it was all in communications. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I've done this route. What is next? And my dad loved what he did. And I thought it would be, I love my dad and we have a really good relationship. What an amazing opportunity if I could spend more time with him. Yeah. I mean, on a daily basis, get to be there and working alongside him. So I had to go through the full formal interview process, testings, this and that. And I got hired, had to pass several exams. I mean, that was pretty much the first 3-4 months of nothing but studying and exams. And then they set you loose under dad's careful wing, okay. and just learning, sitting in on meetings, daring to tip my toe into conversations. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit more confident, and then the baby bird starts flying from branch to branch. And then one day they set sail and they fly on their own.
This is beautiful.
Yeah. And dad and I still work together, but I kind of run the day-to-day business.
That's amazing. I feel like I can really relate to that story. And I'm glad I asked you that because Lauren and I, this is actually the first time Lauren and I have actually met each other. So all of our work has been done on phone calls and emails. So, you know, and those don't include like, how'd you get started? So I love having just this human conversation with you. But I kind of similarly, my dad, actually both my parents were in the beauty industry. And I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And then decided no on that. But they had saved a college fund. And it was like, hey, like this is money that we've set aside for you. If, you know, use it wisely, this is what you're getting. And so I decided to go to trade school and then use the balance of that college fund to buy a condo at 21, which now is my greatest asset. And the security, I think there's something especially about being a young woman, knowing like no matter what happens, I have a roof over my head. I know so many people don't have that privilege. And it really empowered me to try new things and kind of be bold with my career and grow in a direction that if I was struggling to just pay my rent and all of that, I wouldn't be able to do. And so I think, especially if you're listening with kids, being able to set your kids up for future securities and successes at whatever scale you're able to is so important. And that's part of the reasons I don't want kids, because I don't want to worry about anybody else's success but mine.
Not only are kids expensive, pets.
Yes.
Pets are expensive. So yes, I have a 17-year-old cat. She might even be 18. I've lost count. She's so old.
No.
Whole series of medical issues. Irritable bowel disorder. That's
what?
A fun one.
Oh, no.
Diabetic. Yeah. So, and don't have insurance on her. Also have a golden retriever. Also has irritable bowel disorder.
Wow.
And has had 2 bouts of cancer.
Oh my God.
2 rounds of chemo each time. We do have pet insurance for him.
Okay.
So not only, I mean, your child, arguably sometimes different category than your pet, sometimes not different category.
Yeah.
You have to think about the wellness of the whole family.
Sure.
So there are... for kids, a lot of routes you can go. I don't know if the account that your parents had for you was a 529 or if it was just a regular old brokerage or taxable account.
I don't know.
But that is a decision point that I talk with people about. 529s can only be used for education. And okay. it's a broad term. You know, it includes laptops, room and board, yeah. meal plans.
Study abroad.
Study abroad, it does,
perfect.
But not buying a condo. I mean, okay. you can take the money out, but there's some penalties involved.
Okay.
Whereas a taxable account or brokerage account, you don't get the same tax advantages that you do with a 529, mm-hmm. but you get a lot more flexibility.
Okay.
And so those are also decisions that when you're thinking about, hey, I want to set my kids up for a potential benefit, you have to be specific about what type of an account do we want to do?
Yeah.
And are you really trying to push them towards use this for education or use this for pursuing a passion?
Yeah.
And especially in a day and age when education is so expensive, I'm curious to see in 20 years, is going to college or having some type of a degree as emphasized mm-hmm. as it currently is, or do we start to move away from that?
I think we're starting to move away from it. I think we're seeing the early signs of that, but I agree with you. I'd be real curious to know because I feel like I was kind of on an early wave of people who were like, you know what, I'm going to skip college because I have a passion and I'm going to pursue this. And luckily for me, it's so far is working out. But I think that especially if you go to like a traditional high school or, you know, grade school situation where it's a college prep focus, it's like I think it doesn't occur to people that there's other options. I think it's really fascinating watching those trends kind of evolve as options evolve.
I hope that we move away from college being the default too. I just think it's expensive.
So it's expensive.
Might not be the right environment for everyone. There's a strong desire to fit in and blend. And I think it can shape your brain and personality in very formidable years that might not be for the better.
I agree.
I've certainly been through some waves of who am I as a person going into college, coming out of college, and kind of rewriting myself.
Yes. As you should. I mean, I think we all are works in progress and we should always be checking in with ourselves and checking in with, you know, what are my values and why are these my values? Is it because this is what I've been told I'm supposed to feel and think from a young age or do I really feel this way? And we need more electricians. We need more we need people to go to trade school. And there's, you probably read the classic book, The Millionaire Next Door, but it's like the plumber, these are people who have trades that they're able to monetize, maybe have a crew working for them. And so I think that there's stigma around skipping college or going into a trade school that is completely unnecessary. And I blame big college for that.
Completely. I am clueless when it comes to, fixing a leaky faucet, a this, a that. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So right. I have to call someone every single time and I have to do my best to, you know, vet them. And do you have some idea of knowing what you're doing? I hope so. Fingers crossed and let's pray for the best.
Yeah, but I don't actually know. So, yeah. Well, Lauren, we have a ton of questions from listeners that were submitted a little while ago. You've had some time to kind of look over them. Do you want to get into some Q&A?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Perfect. I'm here to help.
I'm so glad. Okay, so I'm just going to ask you these in the order that I received them. Question number one. I don't even know where to start with financial planning. What does that even mean?
So I think financial planning means different things to different people, both client and advisor alike. To me, it is getting an understanding of you. What is your current financial situation? Where do you have money? Are you currently saving? Are you currently investing? What debt do you have? And then also, where are you trying to go?
Yeah.
Because we have to know that side of it too. A lot of times people will say, how much money do I need to retire? Well, if it were that simple, well, when do you want to retire? What do you want retirement to look like? How good are you at sticking to a budget? How excited are you to travel, to explore, to enjoy things? And everyone is going to be totally different. So for me, financial planning is learning you, mm-hmm. your unique situation, and how do we get to where you want to be? And sometimes we have to have a conversation around what is realistic and what isn't.
Yeah.
The earlier you start, so much more is going to be feasible.
Mm-hmm.
We can still do a whole lot of work if you're only 5 years from retirement, but it's a lot easier to do if you are 20 years from retirement, which for some people, we're still talking 45. So you've got a ton of time. If you're like, oh my gosh, I haven't done anything yet. You have time, but like, let's start now.
Yeah. I obviously am not a financial professional, but I, you know, I take the little gems I get from you and relay them to people when asked. But one thing that people say, and I don't know if this is a future question, actually it is.
Let's go there.
This is okay. This is a perfect segue then. So what I was going to say is I have people in my life who have said, oh, I don't make enough money to invest. And I'm like, everybody makes enough money to invest. Even if it's $5 a week, I mean, it doesn't matter if everybody can do something. And so conveniently, the next question is there a certain amount of money you have to make to be able to invest?
So I totally agree. Everyone has to be investing. And I start with people that probably don't have a lot of experience and say, we're going back to basics. Do you have 3 to 6 months of emergency savings for your daily expenses saved up? If the answer is no, that is where we start.
Yeah.
And what can you do on a weekly, monthly basis to get there?
Mm-hmm.
And that in and of itself starts the process of setting aside money. Once you hit 3 to 6 months of that emergency savings, we move that somewhere out of your checking. Savings account, maybe it's a high yield savings account.
Mm-hmm.
Get it where it's slightly harder to spend.
Yes.
And forget that it exists. Then keep taking that amount that you were using to get you to your 3 to 6 month savings. And that's what we start investing.
I like that.
And people might not think of saving and investing as fun. This is to allow you to spend money in the future.
Right.
So you still get to spend it. You just don't get to spend it right now. Yes. And you are saving and investing it for a time that is arguably even more important. Because when you're tired and you're like, I'm done working, you need that money to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And every little bit helps. And this is also going to be a total PSA for investing too. It is much harder to save just dollar for dollar and not invest it and not be enough in the future.
Yeah.
You're going to have to work so much harder than if you take the money above and beyond, which you know you're going to need in the next 3 to 6 months, beyond what you're going to need for emergency savings. When you can invest that and that compounding interest starts making money, my favorite part of client calls, and it's how I start every call, is here's how much money you've made last year or so far this year.
Love that.
And that is new money created that you didn't have to do anything for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what really starts to propel you forward and build wealth.
Yeah.
You do need to be making your contributions, but when that pile gets larger and larger, the investing growth is something, it's a runaway train that's hard to stop. So start now. Start with $50. You know, think about an amount that you aren't going to notice.
Mm-hmm.
I think $50 a month is pretty easy for most people.
Yeah.
Live with that for 3 months, maybe four. Up it again.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go from 50 to maybe 75 or even 100?
Yeah.
And then every 3 to 4 months, increase it.
Mm-hmm.
Set it up. This needs to be an auto draft situation. If you have to go in and manually do it, you're not going to do it.
Nope.
So set it up as auto draft. Increase it every 3 to 4 months. Start now. Anything that you can.
Mm-hmm.
This is crucial. You are paying your future self.
Yes. One of my favorite mottos is I love setting future Erica up for success.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking out for her, whether it's the short term or the long term. And also, I think it's, well, if you have a shoebox of cash under your bed that's $10,000, $10,000 is going to be worth a lot less in 20 years than it would be now. And so if you're not growing your money, you're literally losing it, right?
You are. You are. And people think, well, I have this cash. It's in the bank. It's safe.
Mm-hmm.
So while $10,000 will still be worth $10,000, what that $10,000 buys you is less. And that is a very real concern. I mean, we're just coming off of a couple years of insanely high inflation. Luckily, that's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
But that's eroded purchasing power for all of us.
Yeah.
And just to even keep even the past few years, your cash needed to make 7, 8, 9% at times.
That's wild.
It is for cash. So everyone absolutely needs to be saving.
Mm-hmm.
And once you can get that 3 to 6 month emergency savings set up, usually that's kind of the hardest hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're there, you're already in the habit of saving.
Yes.
Just keep doing it.
Yeah. I always tell people, I'm like, I treat savings as a bill. I have a series of auto drafts at the first of every month, and it takes my money to places I can't access easily, like you said. And I just kind of set it and forget it. And I just know that my money that I can spend and play with is what's left behind. And it is a mindset thing, but I agree with you. Once you get there, it's just like, oh, okay, I can do this.
And potentially unpopular opinion, you have to prioritize this too.
Yes.
Like, I understand the ease of, well, retirement is so far away. Mm-hmm. And right now, XYZ is important to me. Mm-hmm. But is having that very expensive lease on your car right now, which is preventing you from being able to save, is that something that when you're in retirement, you're going to be like, I'm so glad that I leased that car? Yeah. No, you're not going to think about that.
Yeah.
So it might mean changing your lifestyle a little bit, but it is going to be worth it. And I try to be very honest with my clients about market outlook and about you need to be saving more.
Yeah.
How do we get you there? Like, let's not make it an insurmountable challenge, mm-hmm. but we need to be doing more sometimes.
Yeah.
Because I'm here to be your ally. And if I'm not honest with you, that's not serving you.
I agree. Perfect answer, Lauren. All right, next question. I'm overwhelmed with different opinions and information on investing, real estate, crypto, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do I know who I can trust and where my money is safest?
So I think there's a lot to unpack in this question. Let me start with where compliance insisted I start. Mm-hmm. Safe and investing are not two words that belong in the same sentence.
Okay.
All investing involves risk, and it does, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Mm-hmm. Safe is something that is also a fuzzy word. What is safe to you might mean safe to me. At its most simplistic, I would say safe is I cannot lose money. Mm. There's a couple things you can do where you cannot lose money. You're going to give up something. So a CD at your bank, mm-hmm. you cannot lose money, assuming you hold that CD to maturity.
Okay.
And you need to know what that maturity is. It could be 6 months. It could be a year. It could be longer. But if you get out of that CD early, you're going to lose money.
For people listening that may not know, what's a CD?
A certificate of deposit.
Okay.
Banks sell them. You, at least at Raymond James, can get a CD because we have a Raymond James bank. They are FDIC insured, meaning if Raymond James Bank disappeared, you would still have that money in a CD. The federal government would step in and say that that money is still there.
Okay.
You're going to have a guaranteed rate of return that you know going in. That is what it is. It's not going to go up. It's not going to go down. That money that you put into it is not liquid. It is not accessible.
What type of rates are common with a CD?
It depends on what the general interest rate environment is. Right now, you will see a one-year CD around 4.85% to maybe 5%.
Okay.
Which is phenomenal for essentially cash. Mm-hmm. I do not recommend CDs, my personal opinion. I do not recommend CDs for that emergency cash.
Yeah.
Because while it is completely safe, we never know when we're going to have these emergencies.
Right.
And you need to be able to access that money.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of quote unquote safe, you're giving up something. And guaranteed 5% sounds pretty great. Last year, the S&P 500 was up roughly 24%.
Yeah.
You gave up opportunity for growth. Mm-hmm. You might be A-okay with that, but that is a consideration we have to have. So
the illusion of safety.
The illusion of safety. And how does that 5% rate of return advance you towards your future goals? Mm-hmm. So that's my little spiel on safety.
Okay.
How do you know where to invest your money? I'm going to give you a personal opinion after sort of this bland response.
Okay.
Talk to your advisor or your potential advisor and ask their opinions on areas that you're interested in. Mm-hmm. See how they feel about it. They might disagree with you and they might bring a different perspective that you like. And you're like, oh, hey, I didn't think of it that way. That makes sense. You might disagree and say, okay, agree to disagree. Or you might say your views are completely opposite to mine And in that situation, they're probably not a right fit for you.
Yeah.
And that is okay. I think we need to say no more than we do.
Love that.
My personal opinions on crypto and real estate are kind of the two biggies, and they're specifically what your listeners asked about. I start with asking people questions about cryptocurrency. Well, tell me what you know about cryptocurrency. What is it? I mean, I know that it is a digital currency. Mm-hmm. I know that the logic of it makes sense for countries that have instability with their currency.
Yeah.
If there's something where one Bitcoin in India is worth one Bitcoin in the US, there's a lot of appeal in that.
Mm-hmm.
We are not there with any cryptocurrency being a true currency in a stable store of value. A currency should be a stable store of value. Right now, cryptocurrencies are a speculative trading vehicle. It's a thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really represent anything. And that is where my big problem with it lies. If you take a look at the stock market, you are owning pieces of a company.
Mm-hmm.
There is a real company. They sell products, services, they have leadership, they have vision, there are earnings, there are cash flow. There's a lot of different metrics that you can look at and evaluate and come up with a fair price.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're buying. With cryptocurrencies, what are you buying? What is influencing the value other than demand?
Yeah.
And you see very, very wild swings in the value of it. And of course, I have friends that invest in cryptocurrency, some very heavily, some dabble. I get the question a lot from clients. And here's what I say, and you and I had actually talked about this, and we feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
If you're really interested, sure, explore it. But take the money that you would go to Vegas and feel comfortable losing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you lose it, you won't lose all of it. You might lose 60, 70%. Okay, you were interested, it was a play thing, and worst case scenario, you lost most of it, but you were expecting that.
Yeah.
And then if you break even or you make money, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And there are absolutely people out there that will make a lot of money in cryptocurrency and have made a lot of money. But that is not everyone, and that is not the majority of people. The reason why those stories are out there is because they are the select few.
Right.
They are the sensational stories. So play with some money. If you're inclined to do it, know that you could lose 60, 70% and just be okay with that. That needs to be not the money that we're retiring with,
yeah,
not the money we're paying our bills with, not our emergency savings. That's fun money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. On to real estate. So we've both acknowledged that our early purchases of a place where we lived was really foundational for us as people and gave us stability to maybe allow us to fluctuate a bit more, mm-hmm, in our personal lives. If you're constantly accumulating more and more real estate as a piece of investment, what I caution people is that is not spendable money in its current form. So when you get to retirement and you have a portfolio of 6 rental properties, is the income that they're generating enough to pay your bills? If they are, okay. If they're not, and you have to tap into the equity of those homes,
mm-hmm,
you're looking at a home equity line of credit or maybe a cash out refinance, you're paying interest and expenses to access your own money.
Yeah.
And I don't love that.
Yeah.
And people also say, well, if I invest $100,000 into this property, it's going to be worth that and then some. Well, surprise, surprise, same with the stock market. Because you've been making mortgage payments into that real estate. You've been adding every single month. So you've put more money in, which has helped its store of value. And property values have gone up. Traditionally, long-term, by not as much as the stock market. Although, you know, past 6 years of definitely we've seen huge growth in real estate. Yeah. That's not a sustainable pace. So I'm a big believer in diversification. Diversification within the traditional investments you own, as well as sure, if you have a passion for having some money in real estate, you understand if you're going to pay a property management company, and they're going to skim 20 to 25% off the top, and that's okay, or you're going to manage it. You need to know how everything fits together under a unified long-term strategy. Just don't throw all of your money out there willy-nilly and not understand how it fits together.
Yeah.
So don't love cryptocurrency. Don't really recommend it. Hard real estate. More of a situational. You need to know what you're getting into. Tends to work better at scale. Multiple real estate properties, and you need enough liquidity, regular liquidity, to pay your bills come retirement time.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
I love your thoughts. I agree with them too. All right. Next question. I'm risk averse. What are my safest options? We've kind of touched on this already, but maybe specifically.
So I think it goes back to also defining what does risk averse mean?
Yeah.
Are you comfortable with some fluctuations or no fluctuations? Mm. If the answer is no fluctuations, you're looking at CDs, certificates of deposits, a savings account that's FDIC insured, and high yield savings account might not be FDIC insured. Yeah. You have to look and see kind of what information is out there on the one that you're looking into. Pretty sure I can't name anyone specifically, but do a Google search for it. You are probably going to get a higher interest rate on something that is slightly variable, but you want to look for something that is insured if you can tolerate no fluctuations. But remember, no fluctuations comes at the price of liquidity.
Yeah.
You're going to have to hold it for that whole period of time. Another example would be a U.S. Treasury bond.
Okay.
They come in super short durations, like 1 month, 2 month, 6 month, a year. As long as you hold it to maturity, you're going to get back the money you put in plus whatever the stated coupon is. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot in truly, truly safe. So that's where I kind of dig deep with people and say, what does safe mean and why are we concerned about safe?
Yeah.
What has happened to you in the past that you're saying I'm risk averse? Mm-hmm. If it's that this money can't be lost because I need it, well, then we're probably not talking about investments being right to begin with.
Right.
We need to go back to, do we have emergency savings? And if you're actively saving towards a goal of, hey, I need a new car, that's not money that should be invested.
Right.
Money that's for retirement, for my clients, I believe it needs to be invested. We can do lower volatility investments. We can layer in some things that are guaranteed. But if someone comes to me and says, I can tolerate absolutely no fluctuations, they're probably not an investing client and they're not a good fit for what I do.
Yeah.
It's kind of going back to saying no. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And hopefully I will still have equipped them with knowledge. And they might come back around in a couple of years and say, all right, I've made it through the things that I needed to and I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Or they might not.
Yeah.
But what I do is get people's money invested for them to help them hit goals and travel along a plan.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, depending on their upbringing and their experiences, can have a lot of trauma around money and spending and gaining and losing. And do you find, this is not a question, I'm just curious, do you find that you do some like kind of psychological coaching through helping people update their mindsets on money?
Yes. And I'm curious, I think the way I'm going to answer this isn't necessarily what you're getting at. And I'm, so reframe me if we need to.
Okay.
I always call clients when the market is down. Mm-hmm. You don't avoid those calls. You don't avoid reaching out and you talk about it. And I say, I know this isn't fun. Let's look at real numbers. This is what you're down as a percent. This is what you're down in dollars. This is compared to what the broad market has done. How are we feeling? when the market is down is not the time that you want to make changes.
Okay.
You want to buy low, sell high. Mm-hmm. And if you sell when the market's down, you have bought high and sold low. And so I do everything that I can to keep people invested. And I try to give them examples that are hopefully not all that long ago to say, look, in 2020, from the high to the low, the market was down about 34%. That is a staggering figure. Let's just take $1 million portfolio because these numbers are big. A 34% decline is a loss of $340,000. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. If you stayed invested by the end of the year, not only had you recovered being down, you were up. I might have to fact check this. I think about 18%+.
Wow.
So not only did you make back the 340 you were down, you would have been up about $180,000.
Yeah.
So I try to point to situations like that and say, staying invested, you will recover. Mm-hmm. It might not be immediate. It might take a year. It might take 2 years. Doesn't typically take much beyond 2 years. The Great Recession was a little bit different. I think that maybe took about 3 years for people to get back to even. But the behavioral side of it absolutely influences how much long-term pain you feel. Mm-hmm. So when I start working with someone for the first time, I have an emphasis on we're going to have down years. Yeah. We are going to lose money. And that might seem like a weird way to start a relationship with someone. But if they know that and they have that in their brain, when it happens, because it will, they're like, okay, we talked about this. And then the magnitude of how crappy that felt will change what we do when the market goes up. Mm-hmm. So, all right, market goes down. It was pretty much intolerable for someone. The market goes back up. I circle back and say, okay, we need to make some changes. We were too aggressively allocated. We need to dial it back a bit.
Yeah.
So yes, it is a constant check-in. How are you feeling? But when you make the changes, it's probably not going to be immediate. Mm-hmm. And it is an ongoing. And you also make changes based on what the outlook is. And I was looking at the last time we talked and I was saying, hey, I think 2024, we're going to have a recession. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, we're in 2024. I don't think we're going to have a recession anymore. So yay, that outlook
That's
has changed.
I love you being wrong.
Agree. Totally agree. So I think that means that we do a little bit something different with some part of the investment. So changing people's mindset around how do they feel about money, I think is situational. Mm-hmm. What is happening now? How do they feel? Can I make them feel a little bit differently? The other side, I think maybe what you were thinking more is kind of what their past experience has been with money. Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to be different. I find that asking questions to understand why they feel that way is going to be the only way, A, for me to understand, mm-hmm. but B, to maybe change that at all, but deep-rooted, I don't want to call it trauma around money, but emotions is pretty hard to change. This is by far an overgeneralization. People in more third world countries do not have trust in banking systems. Mm-hmm. They typically are very, very wary of the stock market and kind of traditional investments. And so, you know, someone that comes to me that's maybe 45, 50 that says, hey, I feel like I'm getting close to retirement. I've never invested. I'm worried. If they have had a complete distrust their entire lifetime of even banks, mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm going to be able to change their opinion any.
Yeah.
I'll give it a good go and I'll provide some options. But not everyone comes around.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I have always had an interest in money. Not that I've always had it, but it's always been something that's fascinated me. And I've always identified, especially as a woman, that there's safety and security in being financially independent. And I've watched friends and clients and people I care about and people I don't care about get themselves into situations where their dependence lays outside of them and it's a financial handcuff situation. And so I always even subtly try to infuse conversations I have with people with encouraging people to make smart choices with whatever income they have and protect their safety. And I think when you've had that safety eroded, and especially if you live in, you know, a developing country and you've watched your markets spike and crash and, you know, you hear stories of family members who've lost everything, it's really scary. But I think it's so important to, again, set yourself up for success because nobody else cares. No one else is going to do it for you.
No one is. And I'd like to take this to a question that we had talked about. When one spouse makes more than the other, or maybe one spouse doesn't work at all, like what does that look like? I am a huge believer in both people need to have their own investments and savings. Yes. And you can have different investment philosophies for both partners. That is A-okay, but you need your own accounts. Mm-hmm. And let's also do a little bit of education on what types of accounts there are.
Yes.
So you have retirement accounts, which can be either 401k. Most people are aware of that. Maybe it's a 457 or 403b if you're in government or nonprofit, or an IRA, an individual retirement account. 401ks, 457s, 403bs, those are when you are with your employer. An IRA, individual retirement account, is when you leave that employer and you move that money with you. Mm-hmm. They are owned by one person, you. On the other side, you have taxable accounts, which kind of used to be called brokerage accounts or just like a regular investing account.
Yeah.
That is not at all tied to retirement. Taxable accounts are accessible at any point in time without penalty. Retirement accounts, on the other hand, for simplicity's sake, you cannot access until age 59 and a half. Mm-hmm. So that money is really there for the long term. So taxable accounts can be jointly owned. You could own a taxable account with your mom, with your brother, with your spouse, or individually. Mm-hmm. Retirement accounts are only owned by you. So I want everyone to have their own money. You know, that could be in retirement or that could be in a taxable account, but that needs to be yours.
Yeah.
That can also help if you differ on how to spend your money. You prioritize some good old clothing shopping or some travel. Or just different hobbies. So this is my money. You don't get a say. Mm-hmm. Great. You do whatever you want with your money. And if one person is making significantly more or the other person isn't working at all, I really try to push the larger earner to budget in an equal contribution for the other person.
Yeah.
Because it is about supporting the household with, in the back of my brain, because I've seen everything happen, also each person having their own pool of money.
Yes.
Now, almost all of it can be divided during divorce, so that's not a for sure fail safe, but it does help. And it keeps the mindset of continually saving and investing being a priority and being important.
Yeah.
Creating financial stability to weather the unexpected things that come, and feeling powerful that if you need to leave a situation for whatever reason, there are resources that you have access to that you can do so.
Yeah, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, unfortunately, but it just has to be. And I always, I mean, I'm not married, but the thought of combining finances with somebody is so terrifying because I know how I am with my money. But I think it needs to be like a yours, mine, ours.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who just go all in and are just like, here, you can have access to all my money. I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
My husband and I do not have everything shared.
Yeah.
We have good. A yours, mine, and we have an ours.
Yeah.
And every family is going to set it up a little bit differently. And that is kind of one of those questions that I do not answer for people.
Yeah.
I say, you know, think about how it seems fair to you guys to split bills and to still be working towards savings with the end goal of get your bills paid, and everyone needs to be saving money fairly equally if possible. Yeah. Now, if one person just spends all their money, well, you can't just constantly replenish their side of it.
Right.
So there has to be a little bit of like personal ownership and responsibility.
Yeah,
but
I love that.
You don't have to share everything.
Yeah. I think sometimes there's, and I know I keep going back to like, it's a woman thing, but like there's like that fairy tale, like, oh, some prince is going to come sweep you off your feet and da da da. And I think that kind of an underlying theme of that is that, like, then they'll be in charge. And I think people hand away autonomy and safety on a silver platter. And then in 15 years, they're like, oh gosh, like, I how do I get out of this? And I like to set yourself up again for success before that even potentially happens.
It happens. And I even think, beyond just sort of like, oh, I don't know, it's easier to let him deal with it. I think we are all so busy and we all take on so much that you kind of silo activities. Mm-hmm. I do most of cooking dinner. My husband does dishes. Talking about tradesman stuff, we're currently like, we think we need a new heating and air conditioning. Mm-hmm. That is my husband's project. I was calling the manufacturer of our daughter's car seat because we had a question. Like, you silo activities because it's just easier. And finances are one of those things that typically gets siloed because there's only so many hours in the day. But I encourage people to kind of pop their head up. If you are not the primary person that deals with the finances, maybe like once a year.
Yeah.
Join that meeting and just get an update.
Yeah. Well, and if your husband or your spouse or your partner drops dead, you need to know, how do we pay Georgia Power? Like, what's going on?
You do. You do. You need to know where everything is. Yeah. You need to know passwords. Up until very recently, we still had to go in and make a manual payment. I mean, not like go in person, but my husband had to manually pay our water bill.
Interesting.
Which is crazy. I mean, in a day and age where everything is set up as auto pay, you don't think of that.
Totally.
And that one particular service provider is different from the rest.
Yeah.
And it's not going to automatically happen.
Mm-hmm. You got to know these things.
You do. You do. So create a list. I mean, know where everyone in the family should know where it is.
Yeah.
Know who to call. I mean, it always surprises me when someone passes away and it takes the other family. Like, you know, if it's the last person, mom and dad passes, the children, you know, takes them a long time to contact an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
They should have already known where that money was. That should have been a smooth transition.
Yes.
That's an area where you don't want there to be a delay in accessing your assets.
Absolutely.
And you don't want there to be a delay in continuing to pay bills either.
If you haven't already, please go back and listen to my episode, You're Gonna Die, with wills and trust attorney Rebecca Cummings. We get into the nitty gritty of how to set yourself up, you know, to die so that you're not burdening whoever's left behind with untangling this whole web of financial stuff. I think it's super important. And these are conversations that are really easy to put off. And so it makes sense, I think, why people shy away from it, or inserting themselves into kind of an unspoken dynamic that sort of has just evolved. But I've got one more comment to make and then we can pivot away from this. But when it comes to marriage in particular, the person that you divorce is not the person that you married. And so you need to make smart decisions to set your future self up, again, I keep saying this, for success, knowing that people change and dynamics evolve, and the person you trust the most should be yourself.
And I would add to that, the divorces from a financial perspective that I think have gone the best long term, they spell out a lot in the divorce agreement, including if you have children, how is paying for college, weddings, things that come up, maybe if it's even a car, how does that get divided? Who's responsible for what?
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be something where if you get divorced and your kids are young, you might think that is so far away.
Yeah.
And then neither of you is maybe really planning for that big expense, and suddenly it's here. And then you've derailed your personal financial plan because something wasn't kind of talked through way back when.
Yeah.
So just a little bit of suggestion, get things really ironed out and be specific.
Yes.
Do the mental work now to save you in the future.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you have any strong opinions about prenups. I do. I think everybody should have one. And I think that people associate that. They're like, oh, I'm not a millionaire, I don't need a prenup. But this is how I look at it. When you love somebody and you're like, I want to combine my life with you, I love you, I think that it behooves both parties involved talk about if for whatever reason we decide to dissolve this union. Let's talk about, while we love each other, what we think would be fair and what we want that to look like. And there's so many ways to structure it out of love and not fear. And also, if you love this person, you're going to be together forever, none of it will matter. But if you do end up getting divorced, then again, your past self has said, this is what we agree on in being fair, and not, oh, you've hooked up with your secretary. I want, you know what I mean? Like, when there's all of this raw emotion, that's not the time to make smart fiscal decisions.
Totally agree. And I think that what you said is so pointed. If you never get divorced, perfect.
Yeah.
You have never needed it.
Exactly.
And you went into it when you were thinking very clearly, not when emotions run high.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we make bad emotional decisions, whether that is investing, screaming at someone, you know, demanding things or giving up things in a divorce. Yeah. Emotions really wreak havoc on everything. So have things thought out before that. Definitely solidly a lawyer's realm of things, talking about prenups. I would say within the financial world, you can set up irrevocable trusts. Mm-hmm. And I am 98% sure that those are not impacted by divorce.
Oh, cool.
So if I am a parent and I want to make sure that the inheritance that I am leaving to my daughter stays with my daughter, mm-hmm. and her future husband does not get half of it, mm-hmm. you can put that money into an irrevocable trust and then he does not have access to it.
Love that.
Which is my understanding. Definitely talk with your lawyer and make sure that that's correct. But that is the intention. You're not trying to have some future ex-son-in-law take even a portion of what your hard-earned inheritance is for your child.
Yeah.
So trusts seem daunting. They seem like, why would I need it? Mm-hmm. Everyone needs planning.
Yes. And I think people think too, if you're not talking about an amount of money that has two commas in it, that it's not worth it. And I think something that's important to me is that planning for yourself financially can happen at any income level.
It can. I have seen people with millions of dollars be irresponsible, and I've seen people with millions of dollars be very responsible.
Yeah.
And I've seen the same when someone inherits $60,000 or $100,000. It goes both ways. They're either like, this is such a huge gift, this has changed my life, I'm going to be a good steward of this money. Yeah. And I've seen people just take it out and spend it in a year.
Oh.
So if you can put some parameters around this gift that you are bestowing in the future, it's going to protect that person that you are giving it to for the long run. It mm-hmm. protects it from someone else coming and getting it. It also protects it from saying like, hey, you can't spend it all at once. Like, let's have this be there for a couple of good things for you.
Yes. I love that. I think it's super important. And all of this stuff is going to come up one way or another. Mm-hmm. So it's just making the choice to do the legwork in advance, as opposed to, again, when you're at a really heightened state of emotion. Because I don't think anybody makes their best choices in that headspace. Of course, naturally, you know.
Do it when you're calm.
Yeah.
Do it now. And then, you know, set it and forget it for a little bit. You know, maybe check in on it every 5-7 years, I think is what they say for like your will. So just kind of gather everything up. Do it at the same time.
Yeah. One of the things I love about this lawyer that I've referenced, Rebecca Cummings, she has her customers put together an I Love You folder. And in that folder, let's say somebody drops dead unexpectedly, it's like, oh my God, I know where this folder is. It's got all the accounts. It's got the passwords. It's got everything that you need to wrap up the business of that person's life at the lowest amount of stress possible so that you can also grieve. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you love somebody, there's no better gift you can give them than having your affairs in order if you know that there's somebody that's going to have to deal with, potentially deal with the ramifications of the loss.
Yes. I mean, I see this on a very regular basis, unfortunately, just with, you know, we deal with clients that are 90 all the way down to like, well, I mean, newborn, you know, people opening accounts for their children.
Yeah.
The mental load that your loved ones have to take on when you pass and all the places they have to call and all the times they have to send in a death certificate and this and that. And that takes up so much emotional energy. Mm-hmm. If you can make that simpler and just allow them to grieve yeah. and take their time. That is a huge gift you are giving. Yeah. And grieving, I think, can be really beautiful. I had Absolutely. A very hard time when several of my grandparents passed away. And I've always remembered some of the things that they've said at the services. Grieving and being sad is a recognition of how much that person meant to you.
Yes.
And keep tapping into those feelings, because it's having those memories and still enjoying those memories. And it's going to be hard and it's going to be sad, but you honor that person by doing that. So make yeah. sure that you have the time to grieve and just sort of sit with that and not just be so wiped out by having a laundry list of, I don't know where to start
yeah.
with getting everything in order.
Absolutely agree with that. This episode ended up being really long and really valuable. So I'm going to break it up into two episodes. Right now, I'm going to end section one and I'm going to pick up with you on section two. Thank you so, so much for listening. I hope you got as much out of this episode as I did. And friendly reminder, listeners get 10% off at hawkinsandclover.com with promo code CloverClub, all caps. And you can find us on social media at CloverClubPod. And that's where we collected all of the questions for today's episode. So if you don't follow us already, please give us a follow, because we do some fun stuff on Instagram. And if you found that this episode was beneficial to you, please share it. I rarely ask directly to have episodes shared, but I think that this is one, you know, while you're listening, surely you thought of some friends or family members that could benefit from hearing this information. Please share it. Thank you so, so much.